Thinking Aloud. Conversations on the leading edge of knowledge and discovery with psychologist Jeffrey Mishlove.
Hi, I'm Dr. Deborah Lynn Katz, and I am a co-host on the New Thinking Aloud produced by Dr. Jeffrey Mishlove. Today, I'm going to be sharing with you a very intimate conversation with a psychologist who specializes in twin issues, and her name is Dr. Joan A. Friedman. She is the author of 3 books on helping parents and educators and other therapists with the unique issues that twins and their families face. These books are Twins in Session, Case Histories in Treating Twinship Issues, The Same But Different, How Twins Can Live, Love, Learn to Be Individual, and also Emotionally Healthy Twins. Dr. Friedman not only helps twins in her psychological practice, but she is a twin herself. She has an identical twin sister, and she has 5 children, and 2 of them are fraternal twins. And if that wasn't enough twins for you, guess who else is a twin here? Myself. I am an identical twin, and I actually found Dr. Friedman when I was doing some online searching to get insights into my own relationship with my twin sister. So I think whether or not you have any twins in your family, or you're a twin yourself, or you have some twins that are friends, or you just see twins on the street and wonder about them, today you're going to get all kinds of insights you may not have had before. Let's get started. We are here with Dr. Joan A. Friedman, and I'm just so excited to talk to you again. We spoke just for like about 10 minutes yesterday, just about what it's like for both of us to be identical twins. And I left the call just feeling just so energized and excited, and I could barely sleep knowing that we were going to get a whole hour to talk. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I so enjoyed getting to know you yesterday, too. I mean, twins kind of have a kind of an instant intimacy at times where they can relate to so many things about their lives and their history. So, I'm really excited to dive into this talk for both of us.
Yeah. And I felt like I had numerous epiphanies in just those few minutes, because you were talking about how so much of a twin's life is defined by their twinhood. And a lot of times people just don't realize that, so they're not able to share that, and even therapists. So we're going to get into that. And I know you have a few books, and one, your first book focuses on how parents could help their own kids, or educators can help kids. So I thought we could focus on that. And then we could go to your next book, which then helps therapists know how to work with twins. And then we can end with a discussion about intuition or intuitive experiences of twins. So can we start off? Can you share what it was like for you to be a twin growing up and how that shaped you today and the work that you do today?
Of course. Thank you. Well, I grew up in the 50s where there were not many twins at that point, no IVF. So you are definitely kind of a wonderful accident. However, my parents, and probably most parents at that time, really were not equipped to understand how twins need their own sort of identity and their own development. And so, and none of this, of course, occurred to me until later on, and in hindsight, where I was growing up and encountered some emotional challenges that I found out were directly related to my twinship. But my sister and I grew up, we had a big house, and there could have been separate rooms, but that was never talked about or even considered. So we had double beds, double sinks, double closets. Everything was like set up for a couple, which was really interesting. And I do think some parents still do that today, unfortunately. So we were together all, we never were in separate classes, all that stuff. And then we really wanted to go away to separate colleges. And my sister had a wonderful adjustment. I had a very difficult adjustment for different reasons, and so on and so forth. So I began to be very interested. I started to have my psychoanalytic training, and I started to read a lot of stuff. And all this stuff was, it's that psychoanalytic jargon that, you know, most people can't understand. And the cases were really, really extreme and pathological. And I was looking to find something that was sort of more normal, like a normal twin development. And they didn't have such things. So I did my dissertations in both my psychoanalytic institutes on twin issues. My second training, I wrote a dissertation, which turned into my first book, which is Emotionally Healthy Twins. And I wrote it after I gave birth to my own twins, fraternal twin sons, after I had three singletons. And I started to really understand that my connection to my boys, the twins, was so different than my experience with singletons. So I wanted to write a book for parents of twins to talk about the importance of making a connection to each individual baby, along with some other ideas that parents of twins might need to know in order to enhance the experience of individuality.
So how can parents treat their twin children as individuals when they look so much alike? Mm-hmm. And also when they may really want to be together and do similar things? How does one even start to go about doing that, treating them as individuals?
Well, that's a great question. And I think one has to start sort of intrapsychically when you find out that you're having twins. And you kind of have to develop a mindset, which is there are two babies, two unique individuals that happen to be born at the same time. And you also have to realize that you can't have the same feelings for each one, that there are two individual babies with different personalities, and really trying to focus on getting to know each one, which involves making time, if you can, to connect to each one alone, because it's understandable to manage two babies. You have to sort of feel like you have to manage them as a unit or a dyad. And it's very hard to find individual alone time. And in response to your question, Deborah, right, twins, especially identical twins, do want to be alone a lot. They love each other. They play. They're very creative. They sort of just have this synergy between the two of them. And parents are at a loss to figure out, shall I leave them alone? Should they just play together? Should I interrupt them? How do I make myself important? Because a lot of parents of twins feel rejected because the dyad is so close and affectionate and connected that there's sometimes not even room for parents to kind of get in there and bond. But I have a lot of suggestions in my book about the importance of parents really getting in and trying to bond with each baby, because twins can't be surrogate parents for one another, and the parent-child attachment is always the most important. So if it's a mindset first, and then it's kind of a thing of trying to find alone time, trying to maybe, you know, always sing happy birthday twice. I don't know if you had this experience growing up, Deborah, but my sister and I, we never had our own cakes. Everyone got us the same presents. So the one who opened up the present first, you know, spoiled and ruined the surprise for the other one. So I always try to advocate happy birthday to each child, different presents. I mean, you can get maybe the same toy, but you get one truck, one tank, and one other kind of truck. It doesn't have to be the exact same truck, because everyone knows that twins have to share everything. So it's nice for them to have things that they don't share. And that's a part of helping them grow up. They don't have to share clothes. They don't have to have silly names like my sister and I have. And they want to have their own sense of themselves.
Well, that's the thing, like even the idea of two cakes, like that from that's never occurred to me. We never would have ever had more than one cake, you know, or extra candles or anything like that. Yeah, that's such a foreign concept. from a practical standpoint, like, is it really even possible? Like, I remember my mother saying she would forget who she fed, like she would lose track. So is it really practical, especially when you have babies, to be able to spend time with them or treat them differently or anything like that? Do you have some tips as far as that goes?
Well, it is very hard, especially, you know, in the, you know, probably the first 6 months where you're just consumed and overwhelmed and in a fog. But I think as they get older, it is feasible. You could take one into one room while the other one's napping and maybe just read a book or play on the floor, or you could take a little walk with someone outside if the other one's sleeping or your partner might be at home. There are lots of, like, one father told me all the alone time he had was walking one twin down to the mailbox. And that's fine. It's not so much what you do. It's kind of the concept of making room in your mind so that you can connect to each baby as opposed to connecting with them as a unit. Also, another important thing that I always mention, I don't know if you did this because my family didn't, you need to take photos of each twin by themselves. There's probably all twins are together. They're these cute photos and there's none of them as individuals, which also, you know, sends a really strong message about you're just a twin. And you're not your own person. So taking alone pictures alone, pictures with the twins, pictures with the family is a really nice way, again, of promoting this idea of individuality.
And, you know, that has so much meaning for me because I remember by the time I got into college, my sister and I did share a dorm room and go to school our first year. Mm-hmm. And I was starting to just go nuts, feeling like I was being suffocated. But at the same time, the idea of going off on my own and going to school without her or being anywhere, like I just felt by myself, I was so boring. And that's something I've had to really kind of fight my whole life. Like, like there's nothing interesting about me apart from my sister. Is that pretty normal for twins to feel that way when they're by themselves?
I think it's certainly normal for you and normal for me in our experience. I don't know about all twins. And of course, my population is skewed because the twins that are struggling with stuff come to see me. I don't see the twins that are, you know, happy, who've resolved this, who don't have anything like that going on. But absolutely, this whole idea of growing up as a twin, like we both did, and then being completely ill-equipped to be on our own is something I think many, many twins that I see have absolutely experienced because they've had no time to socialize alone, you know, to study alone, to actually be separate away from their sisters. So, and of course, in our Western society, you know, we do sort of focus on individuality. So you're supposed to be an individual at a singleton. You're supposed to kind of know the ropes by the time you go to college. But you can imagine twins that have been together their whole life, they're very scared to do that. One usually relies on one more than the other. So it's interesting to see how one might fare better. Like my sister fared much better than I did. So it depends on our experiences. But yes, it's a really hard transition. And I counsel many parents to make sure their kids are ready because they may want to go in different schools. But if they've never been separated, how is it that they're going to be able all of a sudden? I mean, a college is such a difficult adjustment for anyone, right? But for a twin who's never been away from her twin, it's really, really very, very difficult.
And yet it seems like it would be so hard. Like, let's say a parent is really taking the advice to heart and wanting to treat them separately and have them have separate lives. But what happens, like, one twin, say, has someone call them up and they have someone to spend the evening with or hang out with, and the other twin doesn't? Like, what do you do with that twin? You can't just say, like, stay at home. Your sister's going to go out and have fun. Or can you?
Well, you kind of have to. I mean, and this is so hard. It's a beautiful example of feeling as if you're a parent, how do you parent and let everyone know that there's not going to be equality? I always say life is not fair and twins are not equal. And if you try to make everything equal for twins their entire life, you might be able to do that while they're home. But the minute they go out in the world on their own, they're going to have like a big shock. Like it isn't the same. They're not going to have the same experiences. And that creates a lot of strife and problems between the twins because they've had this expectation that everything's supposed to be the same. And of course, it can't and shouldn't stay the same. So I really advocate parents from early age to try to have twins have their own friends and their own activities. And if one isn't invited somewhere, one's not invited to a birthday party, if they realize early on that they're not going to be together all the time with everything, then they develop a resilience and an expectation. Sometimes I'm going to get something, sometimes I'm not. Not this idea that we're growing up, it's all the same, it's all equal, we'll all have everything and everyone will live happily ever after. Not. Doesn't happen. So what do? You have, as a parent, have to be so resilient yourself to handle the anger and the sadness of the twin that's left behind. And you have to be able to say, yeah, this is really hard. I know, you know, you feel left out, but let's do something special, or, you know, we can be together. You do something to try to take care of the twin who's being left. But it's so much better to learn this early on than to suffer like I did. And maybe you did it sometimes too, about how to handle things not being fair.
Yeah, that I feel like you were a fly on the wall in our house growing up, because that was that everything had to be fair all the time. And I just had this realization. I had a friend who always says to me, why do you have to always be concerned about everyone? Because I'm always, you know, I can't like just go to a party and just feel like I'm having just fun because I have to make sure everyone else is. And I think that was always the case. Like, even if my sister wasn't right there, had to always make sure she was okay, or, you know, included. And it's so complex. Also, something you said before about how a parent or parents might actually feel left out of of the relationship. How has that emerged? What have you observed from that? And how do parents deal with those feelings?
Well, I think by the time I see someone, that dynamic has already sort of lived out. They've already felt as if their parents were not involved or engaged. And maybe the parents tried. It's hard to know, and each case is different. But by the time I see them, they have already had this experience of parenting each other. So a parent deals with that by recognizing that this may or may not happen and making sure he or she, you know, gets in there so that it doesn't happen. But what it does do later on is because it the twins who've not had enough parental input end up being much more, I think, competitive and much more, kind of watching what the other one's doing or getting or being. And it creates an enormous amount of conflict and stress because they are sort of on top of each other all the time, trying to maintain a balance between the two of them. And what you said was so interesting about being concerned, being a caretaker. There's usually one twin that gets into that role more than the other. And that caretaking twin, I was the same way, is usually someone who tries to find what everyone else needs and make sure their needs are met. Well, it's a perfect for me, a sublimation to become a therapist in order to like do that. But what you have to go through first, if you've experienced this as a twin, is that you have to be able to stop and focus and think about what you need and what you want, which for a twin really makes you feel selfish, because we are so unaccustomed to being there for another that to be there for ourselves does require a sense of putting ourselves first, which is very hard when you've been a function or you've had a role of not doing that. And that's a big deal for a lot of twins that I treat, is trying to like, is it okay if I don't tell my sister? Is it okay if I don't want her to work at the same company? Is it okay if I don't want her to go to college? Is it okay if I don't invite her to this party? They have to wrestle with so many feelings of loyalty and guilt that singletons don't even have to think about most of the time.
And what if that sibling wants to go where they don't want them to go, or wants to be involved, or, you know, wants to be part of their social structure, but the other twin doesn't want that? Mm-hmm. How to reconcile that?
Well, I think it depends, because if you have a parent who's aware of this dynamic, it's trying to reinforce that the one who's making her own individual wishes and needs known needs to go to where she wants to go and doesn't have to feel obligated to have her sister tag along or take care of her. I see a lot of adolescent twins who wrestle with this, because adolescence is a time when you want to be on your own, you want to have your own friends, you want to have more of an identity. And there's often this, just what you discuss. What does that adolescent twin do? Does she give in because she loves her sister and doesn't want to make her upset? Or does she say no because she wants to have her own experience away from her sister? So it's going to depend on that twin dynamic between the two of them about what they're able to do or to accomplish. But it's very touchy.
And then what about dating? When a twin first starts to date, or even they get engaged or married, it seems like that is the point where there's a lot of conflict. Can you speak to that?
Oh my goodness. I would say that that's the biggest conflict. It's, you know, it's one thing being excluded from going to a party with your twin, but it's another thing, you know, if your twin is dating or engaged or getting married and you're not, and it creates so much sadness and so much disappointment. And the problem is, it's understandable. First of all, well, if it's happening to her, why isn't it happening to me? The second thing is that the twin who's not in a relationship is absolutely aghast that her twin is going to choose someone over her, because she's been her twin's number one her whole life. How all of a sudden can her twin replace her with, you know, a love object or an affectionate person that he or she's involved with? It's incredulous to them, because they've organized in their twin bubble, in their twin world, that somehow they're going to find attachments together. They're going to get married at the same time. They're going to live next door to each other. That's the belief or the fantasy. And guess what? It doesn't happen. It falls flat on its face. And the one who's being left out of this fantasy and the planning is absolutely enraged. I mean, I've had someone who not only enraged, but it's like an identity crisis. It's like, who am I? How is this happening to me? I've always been there for her. She's not supposed to do this. How am I supposed to survive? Who am I if I'm not a twin? I don't know how to operate or function in the world. It's like, it is so devastating. And this is what so many people who treat twins may not recognize. It's like, so somebody comes in, so they're twins dating something. What big deal? They just don't get what a big deal it really, really is. It is like the world has fallen apart.
Wow. And so there's the sister that's feeling left out, like she's just lost everything in her life. And then there's the one who's feeling guilt while she's trying to figure things out in a new relationship. And then there's her spouse who's in the middle of this. So what does everyone do about this?
It's a case-by-case basis. I get letters from people, emails going, if I had known that marrying a twin was going to be this difficult, I never would have done it. Because that third person is in a very precarious situation, because how is he or she going to feel special. So I've had one woman tell me that, you know, she's so lucky because her husband understands that her twin comes first and he's okay with it. He's accepted it. Actually, he's happy about it because her twin is much more her emotional person than her husband. So he's very happy to have the twin involved. Other men or women make the twin choose. Like, I can't deal with this. I have to be number one. I can't sit here and have you go back and forth and this and that. I don't feel special. You need to choose. And that's so, so painful. But not everyone can handle the twinship in terms of when it becomes a triad. It's very, very difficult. You have to have a certain very secure person who's willing and understanding about the shifting things between the twins and how not to be threatened by that.
Well, and I can see if the twins are just so enmeshed where not only do they talk every day, but maybe one wants to come over and visit the other one every day, or she's listening to her sister's opinions, or maybe the sister doesn't really like the spouse. That's when I'm sure it can just get so explosive.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Right. So the media tends to portray twins as best friends, two peas in a pod who always want to be together. And growing up, I would see these books of twins who looked identical even when they were like 90 years old. And some of it seemed almost creepy, like these 90-year-old guys sleeping in the same bed together, like they hadn't married anyone. They had just lived together their whole life. Mm-hmm. That was kind of disturbing to me. But how common is that? Or is it more common for at some point the twins to individuate?
Well, it's a really good question. I mean, I hope and think that it's much more common for twins to individuate. But I've consulted with those kinds of couples that you described. And what happens is just that they kind of don't know what happened. It just sort of happened that they ended up together. They stayed together. They met each other's needs. They didn't need anybody else in their life. And they loved being together. And everything was kind of easy and predictable. And, you know, they know each other so well. And the communication is so easy. I think that those people who end up like that, I don't know if they're miserable or they've just become so complacent because there's so many wonderful things about being with your twin your whole life. And maybe they didn't have any needs for any outside relationships. I mean, maybe it doesn't have to be as pathological as we might think or as we might feel when we look at those photos. But I think those twins kind of, whether it was a conscious decision or an unconscious decision, they just decided to stay together. Or maybe the window where they would have gone off and met people and made relationships and separated, it closed. And they were okay. They were okay. But I think we as a society pathologize it because lots of times those couples are treated as freaks or, not like you said, sleeping in the same bed. And I don't know if all of them are that uncomfortable or just the way things ended up in their lives, you know?
Maybe so. They're really happy. I actually am a little envious. Like I would just love to have such loving feelings all the time that, you know, a relationship like that, it continued. Because we used to be like that, right? Like we used to have bunk beds and, you know, sure. Just... So to just be like that your whole life and want to be like that, you know, there's something nice about that, even though it seems strange at the same time. But then we also hear stories about twins marrying other twins. And I heard one story where all four lived together in the same household. Now, that's probably pretty unusual, but have you had any clients like that?
I haven't. I know that I think there's a TV show about those twins who marry twins. But I actually have had no experiences with that. So
let's talk about your book, Twins in Session. Can you talk about the typical or most pressing issues that your clients come to you with?
Yes, I think the first one is when one twin is abandoned, either with a relationship, moving away, even death. The abandonment issues are, and the separation issues are the most complex, because at that moment, their identity is based on their being a twin. And with the twin out of the picture, in a sense, and no longer the primary object, they really don't know who they are. And it's very, very problematic. And they sometimes really don't ever even get over it. They can't get over it. It is such a blow. So that's a big issue. Twin loss is not understood very well, and I'm not an expert. There are a lot of wonderful experts on that. But people often say that losing a twin is not the same as losing a sibling. And because this twin you grew up with, you are so much more attached to them in so many psychic ways, psychological ways, biological ways. It's just that the losing an identical twin or even a fraternal twin is so catastrophic that many twins can't really get over that loss, or it takes them a very long time. And I think people don't seem to know, or maybe know that because they haven't come in contact with it. And there are many twins who deal with twin loss who have a very much a psychic connection, I think, to one another, which completely makes sense. I don't have that with my twin, but I am so respectful when I hear stories about other ones who do. And I know people that have twin loss, like one woman I work with, every time she saw an owl, you know, the owl was the presence of her sister, or there was a rainbow, or all of a sudden she'd be driving and a music came on the radio that was particularly of essence to the two of them. Or there'd be a rainbow at a specific time. She was really tuned into the presence of her sister and very much upset, of course, and trying to build a life again after her death. So it's a very interesting subject from an intuitive spiritual kind of a situation. I have a wonderful book actually that I want to share with you afterward that you might want to read all about that, or maybe even interview this woman, because she's incredible.
So how often does a twin come to you where their other twin died and they feel like they're receiving communications from the other side?
I would say often. I would say that I can recall like two or three cases where I've worked with someone extensively with twin loss and very much feeling the presence of her sister. And, you know, one of them told me that she looks in the mirror and she sees her sister. So automatically she's triggered into seeing her and remembering her and feeling her, but definitively feeling that she's around her all of the time, coming into talking to her, coming in her dreams, coming into her psyche when she's upset about something. She talks to her so to help her work through things. So very often.
And is it helpful? Is that really helpful to have
I think it's incredibly helpful. And the twins who have had this that I know of, which is very few in terms of a sample, these were twins that were adult twins that were actually inseparable. I mean, they just were like the twins you talked about, talking every day. Both of them were married, but their marriages were sort of second rate to their twinship. They were in business together. They complemented each other. They were very different in terms of, you know, personalities, but they, you know, and my patient who misses her sister so enormously, she would go to her sister for soothing. And, you know, she just said, all I had to do was go to her house. I could climb into an extra bedroom. She'd bring me some tea and all would be wonderful with the world again. And since her sister passed away, it's been 4 or 5 years now, the capacity that she has herself to self-soothe is so limited because she's grown up for 40 something years relying on her sister to self-soothe her. So it's so, so, so difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and what you just said there, that not only do twins have all these memories and more memories together, probably than most other family members would, because they were together so much, but you look in the mirror and you see the other person, you can't help but think of the other person every time you look in the mirror. I have it where when my sister and I, we don't look so much alike anymore, but our voices are very similar. And I'll sometimes like hear myself on my voicemail and I'll get confused. Like, wait a second, is this me or her? So that it's so hard when you don't want to be thinking of your twin. You just can't stop.
No, I have the same issue with my sister. Our voices are absolutely the same. And we look different now. But yeah, I hear my voice or I'm listening to it. And it's like, oh my God, it's just like her. I remember the first time, I guess I was an adolescent when I heard my voice recording and I thought it was my sister. It was so shocking. And it is amazing that the voices still are so similar where there's a lot of other changes, you know?
Yeah. Well, and then another issue I read about in your book and I've seen online, because when I've had issues with my own sister and I went online to get some answers, I found two things. One was blog posts from yourself that were really, really super helpful. And the other thing was lots of forums, even twin forums, where people are voicing such angst and anger, just rage, pure rage. And what can you say about that? Like, why is that? What causes that rage to be so intense with someone who, on the other hand, you are so close to?
Well, that's a good question. And I think it's partly because you've been so close to someone that the only way you can really kind of separate is to get angry. So it's kind of it's like sort of like when you're growing up as a twin, you might feel merged in many ways. And then when you're older, you want to get away from being merged. You want to like be your own person. You want to be known rather than noticed, you know? And so sometimes the only way you can think about finding your own self is to get angry. Because if you get angry at your twin, then you can be sure that you might be, you know, getting away. And then if you get away, then you can possibly start to feel, you can breathe life into yourself. But I'm afraid that's a very primitive and unhealthy way of trying to handle separateness and differences. But twins are extreme. So sometimes they go from one extreme to the other and they don't know kind of what's in the middle. When I've worked with some twin couples, and I have to say it's very hard. It's even harder working with twin couples than it is with marriage couples, because the twins have grown up and they're still trying to be separate people. And if you don't feel like a separate person, how are you able to sit back and hear, even if someone's angry or defensive, hear that they're angry about something? You know, you have to be able to, okay, well, you did this, you did that, you did that. And you have to be able to have enough of your own presence and your own separateness to be able to hear what the other person's saying to you without erupting. But twins feel enraged when they hear their twin disparaging them or criticizing them. The only thing they can do is get enraged, because they view this as an absolute annihilation. How dare you say that to me? How dare you think that about me? That is not true. There's no capacity to like, I have a perspective, you have a perspective, let's try to listen, without it erupting into a big fight. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that twins feel when they see there's a difference, the difference is seen as kind of a rupture. It's not seen as like, well, I'm this way and you're this way, or I feel this way and you. It's a rupture in the twinship. And ruptures create rage and anger and resentment. And then they have to learn how to repair it, which is very hard for twins because they often don't have those tools either, because there are such hurt feelings involved. That's why there's a whole body of literature about twin estrangement. Why is it so hard for twins to get back into a harmony with each other after they've had a rupture. And it's complicated. And a lot of it has to do with competition. A lot of it has to do with jealousy. A lot of it has to do with just not being able to hear any disparaging comments about one another. And it's really difficult and sad. So, but a lot of twins too, they yell and scream at each other and then they're fine the next minute. I always hear parents telling me, oh my God, they have the worst fight and this and that. And, you know, 5 seconds later, they've worked it through. That's what happens in childhood, but I don't know what happens in adulthood. I'm afraid it's not that easy.
Yeah, so. My spouse just made that comment about a week ago. He was like, you know, it's very unusual that you could be so close and then you have a big blow up and it seems like the worst thing in the world and you hang up on each other and yell at each other. And a week later, you're talking as it like you don't even remember what happened. He's like, this is very bizarre to be around. It's not quite normal. But
except for twins.
Yeah. Well, and then also it seems hard like for twins to acknowledge the differences in each other. Like they both seem to want to make each other like the other one, or if one has a different way of behaving or a different lifestyle, that seems to be problematic. Have you noticed that?
Yes, I've noticed it a lot. And it's very, very sad. Again, it relates back to what we discussed earlier, that life isn't fair, right? And so they're angry about the fact that, I mean, it's normal for all of us to be envious or be jealous. I mean, that's a normal condition of life, right? And there's nothing to be ashamed of. And it's much better if you can acknowledge it rather than feel ashamed about it or that it's wrong, because it's just a human condition. But with twins, the envy that they might feel for one another is really destructive, because it's coming out of this intense relationship where they've tried so hard to keep things the same. And the envy and the discrepancies and the feelings around that can really just make a twinship erupt into something that can't be repaired. So it's very hard, and it can be something so small, like twins who parent their children differently. You know, lots of people don't parent the same, but you imagine that your twin is going to parent the same way you do, but they don't. Or, you know, how they spend money or where they're going to go on vacation. I mean, it's like, what? You're doing that? How come you're doing that? I would never do that. Why aren't you doing what I'm doing? It's like, and you would never do this to a sibling. You would just go, oh yeah, he or she's doing it that way. And you know, I don't like what he's doing, but that's okay. But when a twin does something, it's somehow like stabbing your heart when you see them doing something different or saying something different or feeling something different. It's like a knife going into you, because God, what does that mean? It means we're not twins anymore.
Well, and also sometimes people really mistake the other twin for one or the other. Like we've had situations where we will go into like a conference or a meeting where people don't know us that well, they've kind of heard of us, but then we're particularly sensitive about the other because we could really be mistaken for the other. So if that could happen, then, you know, we're going to want to make sure the other is like portraying us in the way we want to be represented. It's very strange.
You know, it isn't for a twin. I completely understand. And it's a great point, because your twin becomes a narcissistic reflection of you. So if people are going to confuse you and they're not going to know who you are and not be able to distinguish you from the other, and your twin is off doing stuff that is embarrassing or shameful or weird or that you disapprove of, and it's automatically going to be attributed to you. Who likes that? You know, it's uncomfortable. It's unsettling. So you're right. It's like, you can't control what your twin may or may not be doing, but it does reflect on you. And it's another one of those sort of pressures that twins go through until they are really secure in their own identity. Then they can just say, well, yeah, my sister looks like me and she's doing that, but you know, that's her thing.
Can you talk about multiples? How are issues between multiples different than with twins?
I mean, multiples, you mean more than twins?
Yeah, like let's say triplets that are all identical.
Oh, God, I don't know. You know, some of the advice that I give to mothers of twins, you yourself have questions. How is that possible? I couldn't possibly feel right giving that same advice to a mother of triplets. I mean, identical triplets. So there's a wonderful book, though, written by an identical triplet. Her name is, I'm going to pronounce it wrong, Carrie Estravag. It's called Parenting Like a Triplet. And she writes a wonderful book about what it was like to grow up with her identical triplet sisters in a very small town where there was no chance of anyone being able to distinguish one from the other. And their mother died when they were in their adolescence. And I think the first experience that each one of them had was when they were able to go to a foreign country to study, and they all went to separate places. And it was the most wonderful experience that they all had, because it was the first time they were able to explore their individuality and to be by themselves. And anyway, now I know they all live very close together. They're all married. They all have children. And somehow they negotiated all of these difficult issues. One thing I remember her talking about, which is, I think, important to say, is that she remembers being bullied. And I've talked to a lot of twins who've been bullied. And I think people wouldn't imagine that that happens to twins, because everyone wants to be a twin and everyone envies and want to be a twin. They want to look so wonderful. They get so much attention. They're so special. They always have a best friend. I don't think people realize that this happens more than you would imagine. And I think the bullying comes that other kids are envious of what they have and they don't know how to even relate to the two twins. And the more that the twins are bullied, the more they're going to stay together. So it's kind of a self-perpetuating problem that I think people and teachers and other parents should be aware of, that this happens a lot more than we would imagine, that it's that kind of negative side of being a twin. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah, so much so, because you are an oddity and it is abnormal. At the same time, people think it's cool, but it's mm-hmm. kind of weird and strange. I still think it's bizarre sometimes, especially if I haven't been with my sister for a while and then we're together. I'm like, wow, this is so weird. get over it.
No, I see twins too. And I go, God, that's really weird.
Strange. Yeah. And so you know, I was going to first ask you, like, should twins always be in different classes? But when you were talking about the bullying, should they ever be put into different schools?
Well, that's a wonderful question. And say, this is the most prevalent question you get, parenting twins. Should they be in separate classes? And the good news is that there's no one answer. It's a case-by-case basis. You have to figure out, Are they comfortable being separated? Have they ever been separated? Are they too competitive? Are they too clingy? You have to examine the type of relationship that they have, and you have to examine their readiness to do something like that. So again, each family has to figure out what's best, and hopefully they can go to a school where they're able to make the decision themselves, or thankfully, hopefully go to a school that if they want their kids to be separate, there's two separate classes. There's not always that option. But I have definitely counseled parents of twins to separate them into different schools. I'd say like around, you know, 8, 9, 10, around, I guess, middle school. And it's especially happened with fraternal twins that I've consulted with, because fraternals are very, unlike identicals, who are pretty much close in terms of their academics and their athletic ability. And I mean, they're very different personality-wise, but a lot of the stuff is kind of similar. Fraternals are just like regular siblings. So they're not at all evenly matched in most things. So if one is very athletic or one's really like shooting ahead academically, or one's really an extrovert and the other one is really suffering, and they're in the same school and small in the same peer group, and all the peers are going, why aren't you good at this? Or why don't you have any friends? Or why is your brother so good at this, but you can't do this? You're supposed to be twins. I mean, if things get really, really bad in terms of the comparison, then I think if parents have the luxury and the option of putting them in different schools in those circumstances, I think it's the biggest gift you can do for them. And I know parents who've done it, who've gotten so much, how could you do this? How could you separate them? How dare you? I mean, there's so much blowback and negativity, not understanding the bigger picture that this is like the best gift they could possibly have. So wow. Yeah, in those cases, but I mean, people get really upset. They just can't stand the fact that you would think about separating them. It's like, it's against the law.
Yeah, you know, that's such a great point. And just the social pressures, you know, even if barring all the individual psychological factors, but it always seems that everybody wants to see twins as a unit. Like it's like this twin myth, which there's truth to it, but yeah, they want to keep you together. They want to think of you as a unit, and that makes it even harder to go your own way.
Right. And, you know, I call it in my book that the twin mystique, you know, all the stuff that people always say about how great it is. And there are so many great things, but I think people get really, and when parents get like so caught up in the twin mystique, that's really a problem, because they are not going to be parents that are going to be focused on helping the children have separate experiences or have separate birthday parties or separate play dates. I mean, that's going to be absolutely not part of their experience of what twins should be doing. And parents too, like that, also don't feel like their twins should fight. And if the twins are fighting or not getting along, they feel as parents that they've failed, as opposed to sort of seeing it as a normal developmental aspect of relating to somebody or separating, defining, you know, your differences or your own territory. They unconsciously or consciously work against the twins fighting. So they keep them even more together because they're uncomfortable with the fighting. They're uncomfortable with anything other than the perfect twinship.
Wow. And how are twins living in the same space not going to fight? No, I remember just constant blowups. And as you say, like we were fine, you know, 5 minutes later, but I even remember taking a scissor to my sister's ear when we were about 5 years old. I don't know why I did, but just so mad. And as a teenager, you know, I didn't mind sharing my things, but I would be looking for a new dress and I'd find it on her closet floor after she wore it and didn't put it back. That alone, you know, that was it. And yeah, parents get so distressed over that. What advice would you give them if they're trying to eliminate that fighting and it's just not working?
Well, I wanted just to speak to your examples of the fighting. I mean, I have my, that's so great. You found your dress on the floor. I apparently kicked my sister so hard that she had a ring on her finger. I think we were like 6 or 7 that she had to get it soldered off. I mean, we fought all the time. So what would I say to parents? I think, you know, what happens is that when the babies are first born and they're so cute, and you know, you hear all these tales about, oh my God, they were in the NICU, and once you put one next to the other in the bassinet, they quieted down, and you know, there's all this kind of mythology around, oh my God, they love being close. And then, you know, they start to be toddlers and they're walking and they're fighting and they're pulling each other's hair and they're biting and they're doing all stuff that's normal. And it's like, oh my God, don't they love each other? Is what they always say. Are they going to be close? Because they're so worried they're not going to be close. And I try to say, yes, if you can just let them kind of figure out a way to work out with when they're older, work out what their differences are, and so they can learn how to negotiate and take turns and do whatever they can. They will be close. But if you feel like all this kind of interaction and the fighting is weird or wrong or terrible, no, they will not be close, because they will have given no permission to get away and get their own space and find themselves. And that's when you start having problems growing up. It's really hard. And especially during adolescence, I'm thinking of your dress on the floor. The parents are like, oh my God, you know, one's acting out, like one's a goth, one mom told me. She bleached her hair, or all this crazy stuff, so she could be differentiated from her twin who was not that way. And the mother's going, oh my God, you know, this is terrible. And I go, God, it's really not terrible. It's really great. It's really cool. She's just making a statement about that she wants to be different. She wants to stand out on her own. It's trying to educate people that see that kind of behavior, especially in adolescence, as something so terrible, but it's something so developmentally appropriate. But of course, it doesn't fit into our mythology about how twins should be, right?
Yeah, just people wanting to be themselves. That's so normal. And most of society doesn't realize that in this case, there's forces trying to keep people from being themselves. Like, that's really what's happening. If the parents, are like, oh, they're not dressing alike anymore, they're not so cute anymore, it really is a battle against one being in touch with themselves.
Exactly. They don't love each other anymore. They're not close anymore. Yeah, well, okay. They will be if you let them you let them go off, they will get close later on. They will. Yeah.
Well, you're right. Then my final question is, you've been a therapist for so many years. Are you seeing changes in how twins present or how you work with twins now compared to how you did in the past, especially since there's so many more? I mean, do you agree with that there are just so many more in the world?
Yes, yes. I wish I could say, Deborah, that things are different, but I don't feel things have changed very much. I mean, the people that find me who are coming and emailing me and talking about problems, it feels like it's the same thing that's been going on forever. Thankfully, there's just more talk about it. It's recognized and people understand there's certain dynamics. But no, I feel like there's very little that has changed, except now you can go and get help. You can have somebody help you understand so that you don't have to feel like a weirdo or a freak or guilty or bad because you want to leave your twin and be your own person. So when I was growing up, there was no help, no psychological help for anything like that. It was never even recognized. Like in my analysis, for you have to have being a psychoanalyst, the idea of being a twin never even comes into play in the therapy. But of course, it's probably the most important thing that was shaped your upbringing. But people never seem to understand that that was even something to look at. And that's so interesting. I think people are starting to think more about that being born a twin shapes you in so many incredibly different ways than if you are raised a singleton. But I think this is just kind of coming up now. So I think it's changing because there's books and you say like forums and wonderful podcasts like you're allowing us to do to kind of get the message out. But it's still a hard message for people to hear. And they're always surprised when I say, oh, I'm a therapist. I work with twins that have problems. What? Twins have problems? That's a joke. You're like, what? No. And the same thing, my sister and I will take a walk and, so someone will go, are you sisters? Uh-huh. Are you twins? Yeah. Oh, are you best friends? And so my sister or I will answer, no, actually, we both have our own best friends. So they walk away, they're crestfallen, they're angry. It's like we have burst their twin bubble and end of story.
Yeah, so. And that's hard to deal with, right? Because, like they're disappointed and it's kind of like, oh, well, I wish I could say that we are, but we're not. We have other friends, and you know, we can still relate, but it's not according, like you say, according to the myth.
Yeah.
So any other advice for therapists? Maybe we have a lot of people watching this show who are therapists in training or longtime therapists who may just not have really thought of this issue. What can they do?
Well, I think, you know, when you find out that your patient's a twin, that you all of a sudden sort of reset your expectations. And you understand that you may become in the therapy, you might become a twin to that patient. You might be related to as a parent of that twin. You have to know that the twin relationship was probably the most important relationship to this patient that you have in front of you. And you have to be able to be aware that if there's some need for your patient to be twinning with you in some way that maybe doesn't usually happen with another patient, to really like understand that and value it and talk about it and be aware of it. Recognize that it's so very vital to this patient's sense of herself, whereas you can't just dismiss it and discard it as something, oh, okay, yeah, you were born a twin. What about the relationship with your parents? Or it's in many ways the most central relationship to talk about that twinship and then talk about the parents, because it's probably most central to getting to understand and help that particular patient.
So that, everybody, is psychologist Joan A. Friedman. I would like to thank you all so much for tuning in today, and we would really love to hear from you. So make sure that you put comments into the comments section below the video and let us know what you thought. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer them, and I can bring some to Dr. Friedman. I'm sure she would be willing to answer some. So do please put your questions and comments into the comment section under the video. Also, do subscribe, because this year, every year, New Thinking Aloud outdoes itself with its guests and really exciting topics, where you'll learn so much, not just about unusual topics, but from the leading experts and also from people that are really on the leading edge of science. And so do subscribe, do give some comments, and then just go out and prosper. We're really happy that you're part of the New Thinking Aloud community, and we know that this type of programming is going to enhance your life. So tell everybody about it. Subscribe, check out the New Thinking Aloud Foundation website, and we'll see you soon.
I imagine that by now, many of you already realize that, in conjunction with White Crow Books, we've just launched the new Thinking Aloud Dialogues book imprint, and our first title is There Life After Death? New Thinking Aloud is a nonprofit endeavor. Your contributions to the New Thinking Aloud Foundation make a meaningful difference in our ability to produce new videos.